Good morning.
All right.
My name is John Gross with Sensible Technologies, also known as Hydronic Specialties Company and JTG Muir. Today we have the honor of having Ryan Brooker from Paxton Corporation to discuss tempering valves in commercial applications. So take it away, Brian, and introduce yourself. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, John, for setting this up. Paxton Controls Corporation, we are a New York City-based manufacturer of commercial and industrial domestic hot water tempering systems. This presentation is an overview of a little bit of electronic mixing valve history, a little company background, but mostly about how to implement our mixing valves into various types of systems. This is a quick view of the system that we manufacture. We have a controller, actuator, valve setup, and sensor. So all three of these components come together with a couple of other small items that make up the domestic hot water tempering package. Paxton, we do a few things other than tempering valves. Tempering valves make up about 85% of our business. We do some industrial. We supply industrial steam control valves and larger diameter mixing and diverting valves for industrial applications all throughout the country and in parts of Canada. We also do residential mixing valves for radiant floor heating systems, that type of stuff. Smaller outdoor reset boiler kind of valves, so forth and so on. But the bread and butter is the domestic hot water tempering system, which we manufacture and have our own listings for and so forth. It's just a brief history of electronic tempering valves. Our system is a direct predecessor to the Tor Anderson TA mixing valve system. It's kind of shown in this picture, which just dates back to the late 80s, early 90s. They were the first to invent the electronic tempering valve system. They discontinued it. They were bought by a larger company, and some things were discontinued over the years. So we've been manufacturing its successor since they discontinued it. Just a little bit what has changed since the late 80s. The controller we have now is a full digital controller, whereas it used to be, you know, an analog sort of PI controller. Our valve body is fully stainless steel and lead free, which is useful for anti-corrosion resistance and also conformance with lead free laws. I know it's very popular in California and in New York. The only thing that's changed about the actuator is the actuator is a simple bolt-on style actuator. It requires no disassembly of the internals of the valve to replace, which is unlike many of the self-contained style mixing valves you see, which I'll discuss a bit further in the slides. Here's another picture of the package we offer. So why use a main branch tempering valve? It's two primary reasons. Is first to eliminate the bacteria growth associated with hot water. It's very straightforward, easy to keep bacteria totally dead in plumbing systems if the water is stored at a high enough temperature. So typically around anything over 140, 150 and hotter, the bacteria will die and stay dead. The tanks will stay disinfected, or the hot water system will stay disinfected. On the flip side of that, 150 degree water, for example, is too hot to use at a shower body. It's too hot to use at a sink. It will scald you very, very quickly. So the point of the mixing valve is to allow the stored water to be at a very high temperature, and before it is sent up to the building, mixed down with the return water from the building, the unused hot water, plus any additional cold water that has been lost due to people showering or using a sink, for example. And it takes the hot water and the cold water and mixes it to a reasonable temperature. Typically, people usually set the main branch tempering system for around 120, 125, 130, somewhere in that range. And that will ensure that the entire distribution piping for the hot water supply to the building is tempered within a few degrees of set point, usually 1 or 2 degrees of set point. This is the basic conceptual piping diagram for any, really any mixing valve, but this is specifically for ours. You can see the cold water coming into the building is joined with the return water from the building back to your hot water heater, boiler, storage tank, indirect heater, whatever's making your hot water. It is also joined with the cold water and joined to the cold port of the mixing valve. So as I mentioned, this will be stored about, say, 150, 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Your street temperature changes seasonally. Maybe it's 40 degrees in the winter or maybe a bit warmer in California. Joins with the return coming in. Could be anywhere from, you know, 80 to 105 degrees or so. And taking the 150 degree water with the 100 degree water, mixing the two to say 125. The system uses a immersion sensor, stainless steel immersion sensor, piped in the outlet piping of the mixing valve, about 3 feet away. Simple two-wire connection to the controller. Controller reads the temperature and will drive the actuator to make adjustments to continuously modulate the hot and cold supply to maintain a comfortable outlet temperature. So there's other types of mixing valves too. There is a company called ASSE, A-S-S-E, which is a plumbing certification company that classifies and inspects and certifies different types of plumbing devices, from shower bodies to toilet basins to mixing valves. And there are a couple different types out there of mixing valves. You often see point of use mixing valves, which would be under each sink or at each appliance. Sort of here comes off the hot side of the supply and will mix with the cold water at the sink. And same thing here, in some emergency shower instances or shower, the old school style showers with two individual shower valves as opposed to one single shower body, there'll be something called an anti-scowl device, which will shut down the hot water supply if the temperature in the element of the valve is too hot. These types of valves are common, but they typically work in conjunction with a main branch tempering valve. So for example, let's say you had a school that had a bunch of sinks throughout, you know, they would still have a hot water heater that had tanks at the appropriate temperature to kill the bacteria. They would use the mixing valve to temper the system supply down to say 125 or so. And then they might at each sink, just to prevent any, just as an extra layer of safety, at each sink, they would have a point of use mixing valve, which is usually, you know, a 3/8 inch or a 1/2 inch, whatever, you know, size of the sink is very small, self-contained device. So these all work kind of together to maintain a suitable temperature in the distribution piping, a safe temperature at the point of use, and a high temperature in the tank to make sure any bacteria is dead. We don't manufacture anti-scald devices or point of use devices. There are plenty of manufacturers that do, and you can find, if you come across a need for that, you can reference ASSE's website. It has a lot of information about different manufacturers. So as far as sizing and selecting these mixing valves goes, it's a critical, along with piping, it's a critical aspect of the mixing valve success. Every control device, every mixing valve should be sized for a pressure drop. We typically tell people to size between for a 5 and 10 PSI pressure drop. We can handle higher, but sometimes people are apprehensive, design engineers are apprehensive to sacrifice pressure in some systems, especially older systems that may not have pressure boosting. Nowadays in 2020, we see just about every building have a pressure boosting system. Whereas, you know, even five years ago, many were relying on the street pressure or water tank on the roof type of thing. And that's typical for New York. Everywhere's a little different. I think in California, from what John has told me, many of the large buildings have their own pressure boosting system. So typically designing for a more aggressive pressure drop is not an issue whatsoever, because it will be compensated by the pressure boosting system. This sizing is something we do for anyone that wants help doing it. We'd be happy to. I'll show you at the end of the slide, we have a website that we just built during this COVID quarantine that will size mixing valves for you for apartment buildings. All you have to do is just sort of punch in the number of showers, number of sinks, and it will spit out a GPM and we'll select one of our products to use for that application. So a little bit more about how to go about sizing these things. We follow an old standard called the modified Hunter's curve. It's been around probably since the 50s. We count up the number of fixture units in the building, the number of showers, the number of public bathrooms, number of private bathrooms, number of kitchen sinks, number of dishwashers, number of clothes washers, commercial or in-unit clothes washers, sort of add all this up, and we can use a chart here, or you can use the software that we wrote to approximate a gallons per minute. And once you have that, you can calculate a CV and select a valve from there. Again, you know, if you ever come across an application and you're not sure what size valve to use, you can always reach out to John or myself, and we'd be more than happy to help you select it. So a lot of what I do day to day is just helping people size mixing valves for hotels or apartment houses or facilities like that. That's pretty much covers the sizing for, this pretty much covers the sizing for apartment buildings. There are a couple other considerations you need to take for, you know, dormitories and stuff like that, but it's generally pretty straightforward. As a very wide open rule of thumb that, you know, definitely needs to be looked at on every job, but if your system piping is 2-inch, if you know nothing else about the mixing valve, general rule of thumb is you're one size smaller for the mixing valve. So on a 2-inch piping system, maybe your mixing valve is 1.5 inches. Could be 1.25 inches, could even be a 1-inch, depending on what you got going on. But just as a general rule of thumb, if your branch piping is one size smaller is the mixing valve. But again, we are happy to size on a job by job basis for anyone who's looking for help. This is more just about, this is a continuation of the example. In this example, we did a 120 apartment building with 120 showers, 120 bathroom sinks, 120 kitchen sinks, common clothes washers in the basement. When we add this up, we extrapolate and get certain gallons per minute, which then we calculate our pressure drop and select a valve for. So in this particular example, it was 1.25 inches valve. So the key to any main branch tempering valve system is how the return line ties in. It's required to have a return line and required to have a return line circulator. Most buildings do, 90%+ of them do. Sometimes this is kind of specific to New York City, but there'll be some, you know, 10 or 15 unit buildings that were renovated many times, or maybe they were, you know, gut renovated and they removed the return line. We've done mixing valves in some of those buildings and it works okay, but you know, with it, you really have to have the return line to ensure they're very quick hot water supply at the faucets within seconds, the water should be a reasonable temperature to wash your hands and to make sure that the water is always flowing through the system, even in low periods of demand. We require check valves at the on the return line, tying back in to prevent cross flow. Typically speaking, the return line is smaller than the branch piping. So again, like you may have a 1-inch return line on a 2-inch branch piping system. So all of this piping could be done in 1-inch and tie into your 2-inch connections, for example. We suggest also to put isolation ball valves. It's kind of optional. We like it because, you know, if something ever happens, you want to shut the system down. It's easy to just to close off the valves and work. You know, a lot of old valves don't hold. So we tell people to put in ball valves if it's in their budget for the project. When you mount the sensor, it should be in the pipe in like a heel tee or similar type of fitting. And it really, you just need to make sure that the tip of the sensor is in the water flow. And again, the sensor should be located roughly 3 to 4 feet from the outlet of the mixing valve. There are jobs that it's closer, it could be a little bit further. If you're somewhere in that ballpark, you should be fine. The return line needs to split and go to both the hot water storage tank or the indirect tank, whatever is making the hot water, and also join the cold water joining to the mixing valve. This is so that when there is, you know, in a large demand period, when a lot of new hot water is entering the system, the return line is still very active and is being drawn through the tank. But, you know, in the middle of the night when the demand is lower, the mixing valve could be modulating down, no new hot water is joining the system, and the return water is just sort of passing through the system and constantly looping around the building. So these are some this next couple of slides are some features specific to the TVS-43, which is the system we manufacture. A lot of the older style self-contained ones, this is the picture here is an example of a low-high mixing valve system. I forget the manufacturer of this. I think it's maybe Leonard Valves or something, where they accommodate large swings in demand with a large valve and a small valve and a pressure balancing valve in between, so that when the demand is the highest, the water is flowing through this larger valve to handle the highest capacity flows. And when the demand drops off, say at, you know, in the late evening when no one's really using hot water, the water is flowing through the smaller valve and it's sensed by this pressure differential valve, this pressure reducing valve. We have the same feature, but we're able to do it with only our single valve because we rely on the electronic programming that's inside the controller to hold the temperature consistent at very high demand and very low demand. At a very low demand period, the electronic controller will allow the mixing valve to drift a few degrees. Maybe it goes from a set point of 125 to 121 before it reacts. And what this will do is it will prevent, you know, the mixing valve making adjustments at 2 o'clock in the morning when no one's really using it. It will kind of hold its place and it may cool down a little bit. But as soon as, you know, if for some reason at 2 o'clock in the morning, 10 people decided to hop in 10 different showers, you know, as soon as the temperature started to drift past its acceptable range, it would click right back into its fast, full, high demand performance and modulate within, you know, 0.07 degrees from its set point and maintain that aggressive modulation period. So if you see a lot of these old two valve systems, if you were trying to retrofit one, or if you're bidding on a project that has one and you're considering using the electronic one as an alternative, our system is equal. We are a high low system because we can monitor and control through any load of the building, any demand of the building. through a single valve body. So it's actually a little bit less piping work, definitely less settings. Granted, you have to use electronics, so in these older style valves, you do not, but we would be considered as good at handling the demand as any of these two valve or high low sort of setups, which were fairly popular. Our TVS-43 system, we have two versions. We have a TVS-43R, which features a spring return actuator. And that all that does is close on a loss of power. So if something were to happen in the system, say a circuit breaker was tripped somewhere or something was disconnected, instead of staying where the valve is, the valve will shut off and close the hot port entirely. We also have a relay, single pole double throw relay built into our controller that is adjustable limit over set point, which will open and kill power to the actuator in the same instance, but on high temperature. So you're able to have this additional layer of safety with our system where if something goes wrong, either through the relay or through an external acrostat in the pipe, if you have a temperature spike for whatever reason, it will sense that. And after a certain amount of time that's programmable, it could be a couple seconds, it could be a minute or two, it will shut the hot water off to the system and it will display an alert on the controller interface. We also can communicate with building management systems through different protocols to give an alarm to whether it's a SCADA or a Modbus or a backend type of system, and keep the hot port closed until it is manually reset. So someone's going to have to go look at the valve, reset it, figure out what's going wrong, figure out why that temperature condition happened, and make an adjustment. Maybe it was a cold valve on the supply side was accidentally shut, or there's a leak, or something failed somewhere. So that's it's kind of an extra layer of safety that you can't get with self-contained mixing valves, and no other electronic mixing valve manufacturers offer that temperature safeguard prevention. So another thing is there are other electronic mixing valve manufacturers. You know, we find that they are typically requiring external things to program them or to change a set point, whether that be a laptop or some sort of commissioning tool. Ours is a standalone device that should work out. If it's piped right and sized right, it will work out of the box with the default settings. And this set point is simple to change with a push of a few buttons. You know, our philosophy is that it should be simple, and anyone who's installing it should be able to make an adjustment without having to rely on the factory, you know, making changes or an external computer or an external piece of software. When you set the device up, it should stay, and you know, within a few minutes of it running, usually I tell people to wait about a half hour to let it run and stabilize, the default setting should take over and everything should work just fine. All of our parts of the system are external, which a big thing, this is particularly true. We see a lot for hospitals. For hotels, they want near zero downtime. They, you know, if something were to fail in the mixing valve, say the actuator was to go bad on a self-contained system, that's going to require taking the valve apart, opening it, draining part of the system, replacing the valve, the internal elements, rebuilding the valve on site. The rebuild kits are usually pretty expensive. And the entire time they do this, the water has to be shut off to the building. Our system, the thing that would be considered most susceptible to wear and tear is the actuator, and that can be replaced in a matter of minutes. I could do it myself in 30 seconds, but any plumber with an adjustable wrench and a small screwdriver could replace it within 5 minutes. And no shutdown of the system is required. No, nothing containing water needs to be opened. It's completely external to the plumbing of the building. Our controller is BMS ready. A lot of people ask for it. It's not always implemented. We have Modbus built in, and we can talk also to a LawnWorks network or a BACnet system through a pretty simple gateway. So if you have a system that's LAN and you want to incorporate the mixing valve system, you can do it when you install the system. You can also upgrade it in the future. So sometimes, at least in the projects we've seen, you know, they'll put the valve in place, and then the hotel or the school usually are people with more complicated building management systems. In a year after it's up and running, they'll say, "All right, well, we want to monitor the domestic hot water temperature," so we'll help them tie it in with a you know, gateway's pretty inexpensive, $200-$300, and you're good to go. The other nice thing about that is in New York City, at least, there is a requirement that all nursing homes need to manually record their domestic hot water temperature on an hourly basis. And this literally consists in most buildings of a maintenance person or a, you know, someone working in the facility going to check a gauge, writing the temperature down on a log, signing it, and then coming back in. I guess it's hourly, so every hour. With BACnet or with BMS integration, we could pick the data points right from the sensor and do long-term logging, so they can, you know, reference back for a few months. And also, as soon as if something were to go wrong, if you were ever out of range, get an alert instantly for anyone in the building, whether it's an audiovisual alarm in a hallway or it's a text message on your phone configured through some sort of server on a BMS system. You know, we're happy to help implement any of that sort of stuff. The control valve, as I mentioned before, stainless steel, totally lead free. There's no lead in stainless steel, which is useful for markets that just do not accept lead. I know it's a very big deal in California. So we're NSF certified for our valve body to use as a lead-free plumbing device. Also, the enclosure for the controller and the actuator are both NEMA 4. So these can be installed outside, especially in California where it's not too harsh. You know, it gets pretty cold in the winter here. I don't think there's a single mixing valve outside of New York City that I'm aware of. But you know, with solar systems in California and that sort of stuff, it's, I know there's a lot of outdoor plumbing. This system can live outside, no problem. Or, you know, you have a mechanical room or a boiler plant that's, you know, these can be harsher environments with pipes dripping and that sort of stuff. So even if it's indoors, you have an extra layer of protection of your local environment indoors. So that kind of wraps up the TVS-43 domestic hot water tempering system. I also have the last two slides are about some atypical applications we've used the same package for. We do sell this system occasionally in process control situations. One that comes to mind was an egg cooling plant in Nebraska somewhere, where we used a valve sensor controller setup to maintain a cooling loop for a egg processing facility. I'm not sure what the process was, but they needed to keep this temperature loop at a certain temperature at all times. This is a example of a cogen plant that we were involved with in Brooklyn, New York, where three cogen engines are providing electrical power to the building and also hot water for building heat and domestic hot water. So we use three package valves to continuously modulate and monitor the temperature of the boiler loop, the hot domestic hot water loop, and the heat balance radiator loop, which are you know, constantly standalone and monitoring of each three of those takeoffs for the plumbing. We cogen is really big in New York City these days. A lot of people are putting them in, so we've worked on quite a number of projects with this sort of application. It's a great, you know, many times there will be a cogen cogen supplier, and of course there's an existing system, and you know, on paper, you know, connect these pipes here and there, and it, everything looks really good, but it actually is a bit of an art to marry the two systems together. And we find that one of the best ways to do it is with mixing valves, to, you know, to change temperatures and to ensure that different heat exchangers and different machines have the right outlet temperatures, but also the right inlet temperatures. And this is, I think, the last slide here is another job we did. This was for a nursing home. Also a little bit of an atypical application. This is this plant was running steam absorption machines. The water coming out of the coil of the steam boiler was around 218 degrees under pressure. So it's extremely hot. So we designed a system and helped an engineer design a system and implement this, where we used a mixing valve system to control the water temperature of two indirect tanks. So we have a mixing valve on the primary side of the system that constantly loops around and, you know, maintains certain temperature. I think it's 160 in the tanks. And then, you know, to ensure that there's no bacteria or it's 165, ensure there's no bacteria growing in the tanks at all for the tenants of the nursing home. And then we have, again, a mixing valve main branch tempering system to bring that 165 degree water down to 110, which is an ideal range for people who are older, who are in nursing homes. So that's just another example of other ways you can use our mixing valve package. They're not only used for domestic hot water, but some industrial processes and some commercial applications for temperature control systems. So that's wraps it up. This is thank you so much for your time. This is the my contact information and our business address and phone number. We have a website. If you have another second, I can show you while we're still recording the mixing valves selection program to give you an idea of what. Let me just new share. So this is a application that we built during the COVID time, where if you have a building and you want to size a mixing valve, this is for apartment buildings. If you have you can type in all your information about the building. Say it's a 41 apartment building with 65 showers, 65 bathroom sinks, 41 kitchen sinks, 41 dishwashers, 8 commercial washers and 3 slop sinks. As soon as you enter it in, you can get your information right here, get your fixture unit count, your GPM, your selection of this would be an inch and a quarter valve, and you can generate a report to hand off to a customer or a engineer. This will open up as a PDF, and I can just switch you back over to that screen. This PDF is then generated with the building address, number of information, number of apartments, sort of thing, and a breakdown of all the fixture counts and information. And to continue down, it shows a bit about what valve to select and all the models and information like that. So it's a very useful tool. It is available on our website, if anyone comes across it and wants to play around with it, they're welcome to. It actually is it's very useful too for if you have an existing mixing valve system and you want to just double check, you know, I'm going to replace it with an electronic system. Am I going to go back just because the old Holby valve was a 2-inch, and are we going to put in a 2-inch Paxton? Well, you know, check it. And you may come up with an inch and a quarter Paxton valve, or an inch and a half, or maybe it's a 2-inch, you know, maybe it was the right size. So two jobs we did recently, we ripped out a 4-inch Holby mixing valve system, and we put in an 1.5-inch TVS 43. So there are plenty of examples out there of oversized mixing valves, and this is a good tool to sort of figure out if you're on track or not. And again, we're happy to help size and select valve for any application. So just wanted to share that little tool with you while we were still sharing screens. And that's it.
All right, thank you so much, Brian. I'm gonna end recording, and then I'll open us up to questions if anyone has any questions.
Sure.